Welcome to the next episode of MK Crypto Diaries. I am your host, Dr. Justine Cherrera, and today is the 18th of November, 2022. Today, we will be taking a deep dive into the world of blockchain identity, which is actually a very hot topic right now, mainly due to the increase of regulation. So what is blockchain identity or on-chain verification? Are there actually any viable products or solutions for DeFi players to be able to use? We'll also be speaking a bit about regulation. What is the FATF travel rule all about? And why is blockchain identity verification so important for compliance with the travel rule? Now, here to discuss these topics with us here today, we have Bob Reed. Bob Reed is the CEO of Everest Network. Everest Network is a licensed crypto custodian and broker which also offers unique biometrics-based digital identity solutions. Incidentally, Everest is licensed in Malta by the MFSA. Prior to Everest, Bob was an advisor to Kai Labs, which is a blockchain-focused think tank and accelerator. Bob was also a general manager of licensing at BitTorrent. Okay, Bob, thank you so much for joining us here in our offices at MK FinTech. We're very lucky that you're actually in Malta and you came down for Sigma and IBC and you can join us live here for this session.
Of course.
So let's just dive right in. So Bob, you are currently the CEO of Everest Network. Can you tell me a bit about Everest and what Everest offers and is working on?
Absolutely. So Everest did what I would call the next generation of all crypto, which I know is a rather bold statement. But if you think of Bitcoin as sort of fundamentally the gen one of in-out functionality, right? Using proof of work. And then next gen being if-then statements, that is smart contracts, right? Led by Ethereum, right? And a host of others that were doing basically ledgers, right? What Everest brought to the table is what actually Vitalik's been trying to accomplish for years now, which is how do you do human and unique identity attached to really a full stack of a blockchain, right? So if you think about an e-government or an e-bank or a real society, the base of the stack is human unique real identity with an account or a wallet, with a ledger and currencies and stores of value. So we did the entire stack again at our base that was really unique is really human unique identity.
I know for sure. So you combine obviously the services you offer, brokerage, custody, but with the element of a wallet and identity, which not everyone does. So
right. And what's interesting about it is like identity in crypto is actually, it's a hard problem to solve. And what we did is we fundamentally move the problem to governance. So we put, if you will, the identity actually isn't held by Everest Network Malta, and we put the governance into a nonprofit. We call it the foundation, and not even Everest or I at gunpoint from the CIA, NSA, or anybody else could actually open the data store of an identity.
Oh, that's smart.
fundamentally.
It's like a hybrid solution, anyway.
Yeah. So if you were to combine like, here's a user-owned identity that can never, ever be opened. And when they want to go do a financial transaction, then they can come to Everest Network Malta. Well, that's fundamentally what we've built.
Okay, amazing. So blockchain identity has definitely been an area of focus of yours for quite a while. It's incidentally become quite a hot topic. So let's talk a bit about sort of what is blockchain identity and also what is going on in this space. Can you perhaps give a definition or perhaps an explanation of what exactly blockchain identity is or perhaps on-chain verification just for the benefit of our listener?
Sure. So let's talk about what identity is and what 99% of blockchain folks are doing. Because what blockchain folks are doing, to be honest, I'm actually... it's getting exhausting explaining this to everyone. Right. So again, blockchain identity folks are out there. Most of them are doing credential sharing, right? So they'll get a credential from a bank or a government or some third party and do a hash of it, mm-hmm. usually in the form of a DID, a decentralized identifier, and then enable the user to share that credential. All right. So that's very popular. In that paradigm, you actually don't know, is this really Bob? Can you really prove, am I who I say I am? I can give you some examples on that. So like, here's a good one since, you know, we're talking about regulation often these days. I can take, for example, here's my proof of address from my bank and I now have a DID hash of it. I can also say, here's a proof of address from my utility token. There's a hash of that. Mm-hmm. Those are now, when I go to share those hashes, those can actually be two different identities in that paradigm. And so it's without an anchor underneath of this is truly Bob, what I just managed to do was launder money. So I'll say it very bluntly, DIDs without an anchor of an identity underneath enables money laundering.
Yeah.
So any of the traditional finance or any of the regulated folks or DeFi that's about to be regulated, if they use DIDs, they're going to get fined and go to jail.
But I think that the key difference is identification and verification.
Correct.
You know, so I can easily share a document, copy a document, get a document, but who's verifying that data?
Right.
And that is, I think, the missing part of the product within the market.
Right. Look, I was lucky enough to have the ex-president of Estonia on my board, right? And he was the one who actually pointed it out to me. He goes, look, you know, e-government all started, by the way, with the banks doing KYC. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to be able to share credentials. And in order to make that happen, he literally had to build a national identity system to feed that. So the KYC sharing happened inside banks, but only because there was a foundational, truly unique piece of carbon identity underneath that. And if you don't have that, literally the systems can't work.
For sure. I think Estonia is one of the few countries which actually have an EID system in place, is adopted, it works, and it's smart because it needs to come from the government in order to be trusted and have third parties like banks plug into the system.
Exactly.
So it would be great if everyone had to follow suit, but, you know, easier said than done.
True. I say, by the way, like India followed suit, and what we saw or are seeing out of India, it's the Aadhaar system, which is their biometric identity platform, and then they have India Stack on top, which basically looks like the stack I just described of Everest. And what they continue to see is, since it's a centralized set of databases that the government controls. So first the government tried to come out legally and say that identity is ours. Thank God for the British courts that said, no, it's not. And second, they get hacked all the time, right? So when you have centralized databases held by, you know, governments or really large third parties like Equifax or something like that, they get hacked. And that's just a wrong architecture to do it.
No, definitely. It's a major risk. And let's be honest, governments aren't as reliable as private actors when it comes to technology advancement, security, you know, new innovative products and all that. So the best would be to leverage, obviously, some of these private actors in the mix. Now, there's a lot of talk about blockchain identity, and everyone seems to have some solution. Many sort of top players are saying, you know, we have the product for you, we're going to launch soon. So I don't know, maybe you have some insight about what's going on behind the scenes. We've seen like Polygon and Chainlink and some other players say they have a solution and they figured it out. Can you perhaps mention some of these solutions which are being thrown around and the pros and cons and if they are a viable solution?
Sure. So it's interesting. I actually know both those guys very well. I've actually spoken to their architects. They're the leaders who actually are out publicly and written the papers, etc. Both of them focus on zero knowledge proofs. And what they're really doing is they're doing zero knowledge proofs, which they're wrapping privacy enhanced credentials. So imagine that hash of my address that now gets wrapped inside of a zero knowledge proof and sent somewhere. Now, from a, does it make everybody feel good? Sure, it sounds really cool. It's got some cool acronyms. The truth is, it's not viable as an identity system. It's not viable for a vote, for a DAO. it's not viable for anything to do with regulations. Mm. So I'll give you a real example again. Like, take Polygon ID. Let's go ahead and do a DAO, and we're going to do a vote, and there's 4,000 wallets that show up. And here's a zero knowledge proof that I'm, if you will, a resident or a member of something. Well, I can have hundreds of wallets that do that in this paradigm. So literally, all they're doing is doing, again, private credential sharing. Mm. They're not actually verifying that I'm a single human being.
Mm. And is it, do you think, because they are unaware or uneducated about the level of reliance or KYC you need, if you're a bank or an exchange, you know, in terms of to be a good product for those regulated entities, do you think it's just... They have no idea, or
it's both. Mm-hmm. So I've got to be a little careful because I'm under NDA with, think, both of them. But
well, we don't have to be specific. But let's say these solutions.
So
perhaps.
It's beyond just regulation. So mm-hmm. I can tell you, almost all of them are utterly clueless of mm-hmm. requirements of mm-hmm. compliance mm-hmm. for KYC. Right? They're looking at. Let me just get a green check mark from a software provider that says mm-hmm. I've been KYC'd, mm-hmm. and attach that to a wallet. Mm-hmm. And they are totally unaware that there's no way a financial institution on planet Earth can accept that, right? Because the requirements are ongoing monitoring. How do you do ongoing monitoring with a zero knowledge proof?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you and I both know, like, we'll get, an email from the financial intelligence unit or the MFSA that says, hey, this named person, mm-hmm. If you see them try to transact, please let us know. Don't tell them, etc. You can't do any of that with a zero knowledge proof. So not only are the blockchain identity folks, by and large, mostly clueless about what's required for regulation, the other piece, and this gets into soulbound tokens a little bit, mm-hmm. they literally are starting from the point of view of, oh God, I've got a wallet mm-hmm. and a ledger. How do I try to contort myself into finding an identity into that existing paradigm? And Everest didn't do that. So let's think about it this way. Vitalik, who's clearly aware, unique and human is required for a society. Definitely. And so he tried with soulbound tokens, a little bit like...
Yeah. Can you perhaps define soulbound tokens?
Sure. Soulbound tokens being NFTs, so unique tokens that can go into a wallet and they're not supposed to be moved from that wallet. Okay. Now, by the way, they actually can be moved.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Once that unique NFT is in the wallet, then you're supposed to be able to add attributes to it. So like reputation or proof of attendance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if, again, let's just play it out, common sense. I can have 500 wallets, each one with a soulbound token. It still does not determine those 500 wallets, you can't tell, is it really Bob under
mm-hmm.
there?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, he's incredibly bright and accomplished, but he's stuck within mm-hmm. the paradigm of mm-hmm. trying to make a wallet mm-hmm. and a ledger system work. Mm-hmm. And he cannot solve, and no one has, mm-hmm. at least to my knowledge, except Everest, how do you do a human unique, this is really, I am who I say mm-hmm. I am, underneath a wallet?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, Polygon missed, Chainlink missed, Vitalik missed, everyone who says they do blockchain identity, 99% of them, if you look at it, they're really doing credential sharing, and they're not solving the fundamentals.
And that's the thing, sort of, you know, the perception out there is completely wrong. And then if you start to unravel the layers of what exactly is going on, is it transferable? Can you rely on it? You know, will a bank accept it? And then you start to, you know, face these type of problems and challenges.
Yeah.
On this, we spoke a lot about regulation. I'd just like to touch on the travel rule a bit.
Sure.
So just in case the listener is not familiar, the travel rule is a concept which came out of FATF. So basically, FATF requires all virtual financial assets service providers, including banks, to share relevant data from the originator and the beneficiary of information stemming from crypto asset transactions. So here we're essentially talking about if there's an exchange or a custodian or a bank or a broker which is receiving or sending money from a non-custodial wallet let's say MetaMask, they should be conducting KYC in certain instances.
Sure.
So in reality, how this played out, and there has been a lot of interpretation by, let's say, Chainlink or other top players to sort of break it down and see how and what this is going to be applied. The outcome was that if the transaction is being sent or received from your own wallet, and let's say, for example, I have an account with an exchange and I want to send money from my MetaMask to my exchange or my custodian, then I won't need to do KYC. So it could be, let's say, a checkbox exercise. But if you are sending or receiving to a non-custodian which doesn't belong to you, you should be doing KYC. Now, the question is, in reality, there doesn't seem to be any viable options, or if there are, these products aren't really being widely adopted in this space. So how do you think these players are incorporating this into their operations, if at all?
It's a really good question. I'll tell you what pops to mind, which is there was a headline about 3 or 4 weeks ago regarding what Mika has in their draft, which getting ratified in February from the European Parliament, which was the headline was peer-to-peer does not need to do, if you will, travel rule, right? You can actually send, you don't have to screen the other wallet if you're doing peer-to-peer. And the next paragraph down, they said, DeFi and DAOs will be entities. And when you do that entity, you and I both know, all of a sudden that comes with obligations. Those are legal obligations.
The so subject person.
They're subject person. And so practically, what we're seeing is DAOs and DeFi will have to do some level of wallet screening. So think of Elliptic or Chainalysis, or let's just make sure a quick screen, this isn't North Korea, right?
As a minimum, at least.
As a minimum, right? We'll see probably the level of transaction risk. We'll determine, like, if it's $1 million worth, they're probably going to do a full KYC, AML, enhanced due diligence. For most things, it'll probably just be wallet screening unless you're DeFi, and then DeFi is clearly going to be regulated. They'll have to do a full compliance suite.
Yes.
Now, for the peer-to-peer, well, the truth is peer-to-peer is going over open blockchains in most cases, and the regulators and authorities can look at that and just, and they already are, go like, that's the 11th transaction in 45 minutes for $1 million, and they know exactly how to go find those people. So they don't have to go police that. No. Again, they put the onus back on the entities, and the entities are going to be DAOs and DeFi.
And that's sort of the problem, I think, with trying to regulate this space.
Yeah.
You know, there should be special regulations using the special tools which stem out of that technology to, you know, put together a set of rules which can actually be complied with. Because to put them in a box when we're speaking about different technology and capabilities just doesn't seem to work. But I don't think that there has been a grasp from the regulators in that, okay, you know, not just figure it out. There's no way to just figure it out. Which brings me like to my next, going a bit deeper into this question. So MiCA, which is the regulation you just mentioned, speaks about, you know, the potential ability of compliance tools to be embedded within the technology. However, some of these platforms and products are already very widely spread and used and adopted. So I'm just going to mention MetaMask because it's quite a well-known sort of product. 22 million wallets, as I mentioned. So how do you think this could apply retrospectively? So could these platforms and products update their technology to perhaps allow for an API for a third party to step in and perform that function? Would that be a possibility in terms of, you know, being able to comply?
Absolutely. So we've seen, and we've actually done some of this ourselves, where you have an existing user base of wallets, screen them, actually add identity to them. Like, here's a couple hundred thousand. We even saw a tender once where take 1 million wallets and go KYC all of them, do an address verification. So the answer to that is yes. Where I think it will get applied in 2023 will actually probably be with the decentralized exchanges, where they can actually rely on a third party to actually do the full compliance suite, right? They're going to have to go like, look, if you're Uniswap, SushiSwap, QuickSwap, etc., you're going to have to check an identity, but they don't really want to see the identity data ever.
No.
And they need to stay clean. They're really just smart contracts that are open. So they will be contracting with folks like Everest or somebody that does a full compliance suite that does KYC, identity verification, risk rating, reporting. They're probably even going to have to do Bank Secrecy Act enforcement, like, okay, hey, that thing's about to escape with, you know, $5 million to North Korea, freeze it. They'll put all of that into a third party like Everest to sort of administer that for them. And it keeps them clean.
Yes.
And honestly, it makes it more private for the user.
Yes.
That is, if Everest does this, the only thing we have to give to Uniswap or Sushi or et cetera is, in this case, we have the underlying piece. We submit to them a zero knowledge proof because we actually do that.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. No, it's perfect because it fits really nicely into my next question, which is about sort of having a centralized party to take care of the KYC part. So basically, what do you think is the best product fit for the market? Could the answer be a centralized party, which is known in the market for everyone to be able to have a relationship with to conduct the KYC on-chain? So for example, you know, a player interacting with a KYC on-chain will set a green light and basically have the green light that it went through the centralized party for KYC. However, this is quite an ambitious plan. So it's, you know, from a network and infrastructure, you know, perspective, do you think it is achievable? Or how could this be achieved?
I do. I would hesitate to use the term centralized party. But let's just take a step back on what's what's required by decentralized exchanges, DeFi generally, to be compliant, right? Again, identity verification is this really Bob, right? Full KYC, AML, CFT, PEPIT, sanctions checks, transaction and user risk profiling, right? You then have to go ongoing monitoring. Is Bob now on the politically exposed list the month later, right? Is it also, all the reporting, right? Reporting in Europe's different than US, that's different than Japan, right? And it's, by the way, it's not dependent on where the decentralized exchange is located, it's where the users are, right? And then you need to have a license. So those are just the requirements to be compliant. So what can a decentralized exchange outsource? Well, they can't, they either have to build it themselves, which we both know there's no way they want to do. That is a arduous task and it goes contrary to their business model. They won't do it.
Definitely, I agree.
So they need to contract with a party that will actually do all of this, the entire stack, right? And do ongoing monitoring and do the reporting, et cetera. And when I say that, that means a green check mark from a software provider in, you know, that does a KYC check is not going to suffice for them. Not
definitely.
At all.
Definitely.
And so in terms of, and I'll go back into the architecture of Everest. Everest built infrastructure and gave the identity infrastructure and a chain to a nonprofit foundation that literally I can never touch and open. And so what that does is it really puts the privacy and the user data back to the user's hands. So they can go, okay, I want to do a transaction on QuickSwap. I will exchange this amount of information with Everest Network Malta in order to do this. But you don't get to see everything about me. You don't get to know my gender, my age, my, like, there's a whole bunch of things that you don't need to do. So I...
No, I think that is definitely the way to go in terms of, you know, how to solve this gap in the market. The only thing is that all these players will need to have some reliance agreement with you to be able to rely on your green check. Well, you're definitely, you know, a subject person, you're regulated, you can, you know, perform these services. But then all the other persons will need to have, let's say you take the top 10 custodians, DEX, banks, whatever, and then your network will grow in terms of you being that relied upon third party.
True. Look, it's the holy grail of how do you do KYC that's accepted by everybody in the world. And the truth is, if you'll, Garlinghouse at Ripple actually nailed this quite well, which was, is like, guess what? That doesn't actually happen if you're just dealing with the KYC, right? Bank of America will not accept the KYC of Citibank. But since they actually have a correspondent relationship where they're actually trusting each other and sending money back and forth.
Exactly.
Now they can actually trust that
yes.
the identity in Bank of America is okay in the mm-hmm. Bank of America.
It's like the SWIFT network for KYC, basically.
And the only way to get there is to actually have, mm-hmm. if you will, be a regulated entity yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the only way to get there. And so that's why I feel really good about Everest's position in the marketplace. Is like all the software providers can't do this. They're not regulated entities.
I agree. I think it's a great product and it has a massive use case and fit and need for the market.
Yeah.
So to conclude, what would you say you are most excited about in this space?
What I'm most excited about is actually people are starting to realize what unique deduplicated identity means. And I'll give you a sense. Like, look at what Elon Musk is trying to solve at Twitter, right? With Twitter Verified. So he's starting with get rid of bots. Okay, well, you can do that just by doing a humanist check. Well, how many accounts can I have that are verified that I'm... So you can do verified accounts that are not human. Great, mm-hmm. I can have 100 of those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's highlighting now, okay, it has to be human and it has to be unique.
Mm-hmm.
And even he hasn't solved it yet,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we continue to go back to our core of what we started with, which is every society seems to need unique human identity at its core.
Definitely.
And we're just looking at which communities are adopting it first.
I think working with governments would be a really great starting point, because then all their network will, be forced. And government of Malta, then banks and everyone else will accept this solution.
Exactly. I mean, one of our first projects was the government of Indonesia and delivering aid out into the villages, right?
Okay.
We had to be human, unique, et cetera. And so now, again, what I'm most excited about is people are finally understanding the utter necessity of this, and the fact that DIDs, zero knowledge proofs, and soulbound tokens without that underneath won't work.
Agreed.
And so, again, we actually look at all of those DIDs, zero knowledge proof, and soulbound token providers as partners, because we're the thing that fits underneath them, right? And makes their credentials actually have value.
No, it's amazing. And I'm really excited to see, the journey of Everest and, the amount you're going to grow, because I think there aren't many other providers who are solving this exact, problem and challenge to that level of accuracy. And with the combined knowledge of, technology and regulation, really and truly.
Yes, I'm going to say the 4-year education in Malta with the regulators has been fantastic. Again, we couldn't be happier about being grandfathered into MiCA in Europe.
Definitely.
And understanding the compliance requirements as well as we do now.
Definitely. No, you're definitely reaping the benefits of the, high entry to barrier now with MiCA coming in. It's going to be an easy transition. Yeah. You're one of the lucky ones. I could guarantee you that.
I agree.
There's going to be a big mess, I think. But that's for another conversation and another day. So thank you so much, Bob. Your time here was, really valuable. I really enjoyed this discussion. Before I let you go, I'd just like to invite you to take part in a round of something I call bullshit. So I'm going to read one question out and tell me if it's true or false.
Okay.
So according to Chain Analysis, as of early 2022, illicit addresses hold around 1 billion worth of cryptocurrency, with the vast majority of this held by wallets associated with cryptocurrency theft. So 1 billion. Do you think it's true or false?
I think the measurement by Chainalysis of the illicit funds, money laundered, terrorist financing, et cetera, is incredibly, incredibly low relative to cash or the global economy. Mm-hmm. So if that's a billion, sure, I would believe that.
So actually it's false, because the correct figure is 10 billion.
Okay.
Which speaks volumes about the need for identity and the crisis in terms of cryptocurrency theft.
Yeah.
So I know you think 1 billion is substantial, but it's actually 10 billion, which is absolute craziness.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you so much. On that note, I'll let you go, Bob. If anyone listening wants to get in touch with Bob Reed from Everest, you can find him on LinkedIn, and I'm sure he'll be very happy to take the conversation further. Or if you're looking for a solution with an identity, as you can hear, he's definitely the right person to speak to.
Yeah, we're pretty easy to find. It's everest.org. on the web. And thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.